Hello? Can everyone hear me okay? My name is Carolyn C., and I am a compulsive overeater recovered by the grace of God for today. Thank you so much for coming to the event today. Without each of you, we would not have such a vibrant and dynamic gathering. I'd like to start with a prayer and invite God into this speaker portion. God, higher power, mother, father of the universal higher power that exists between us all, please be with us now during this speaker presentation. Please allow your words, your intention to flow through my mouth. And allow the words to enter in as they are needed to those who are present. Please allow me to let go of my own ego so that your words can be fully present and your presence can be fully felt. Amen. When I was thinking about this, this is my first speaker presentation, so bear with me. I have a lot to say. I tried to edit it. But I wanted to have some inspiration outside of myself. And it started off with being this whole thing about I was going to involve all of you and people are going to stand up. And it was going to be a circus. And I started thinking about how we try to manage and control everything, or how I tried to manage and control everything. And so I opened the big book. And I kid you not, this is what I open up to. So it's from We Agnostics. It's on page 54. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, it wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We could not prove in the life. Sorry. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet, there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling on to a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seemed more intelligent than that. At least so the chemist said. Hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. Though it emanates from our best minds, what about people who prove that man could never fly? Yet we had been seeing another kind of light, of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. Huh. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things like work, food, alcohol, texting, Netflixing, Facebook. I'm ad-libbing. But in some form or other, it is there, for faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but God was there. God was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only here that God may be found, and it is so with us. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. So connecting with the light within is something that has been coming to me very clearly over the past couple of months as I reach the end of my first year. My father is a Lutheran minister. He married my mom, who is a nurse, and whose name is Faith. My middle name is Faith. I was raised in a loving, liberal, middle-class, non-violent household, mostly in the suburbs of Boston. I did not want for much, other than the occasional Christmas present or the current coolest thing, but I always felt like I was less than, and that I was lacking something. My earliest memory, believe it or not, was when I was perhaps around 2 or 3 years old. I remember I was in a crib in the church nursery. My mom was leaving to go to the church service, and I was inconsolable. I don't remember much more about that moment, but I connect with it in the sense that from before food was ever a solution, I had a sense of sadness that I brought with me into this lifetime. I was raised in a loving environment that should have set me up for success. And yet, throughout my life, I ignored, denied, at times dipped my foot in the pool, but mostly ran from the spirit that has always been there for me as a solution to my human emotions. I remember first being aware of my body size when I was in elementary school. I was not athletically inclined, and I liked eating as much as socializing, maybe even a bit more. I was not comfortable in my own skin, which I can see as I look back in pictures from about 5th grade onward. At 12 years old, either 6th or 7th grade, my mom, doing the best that she knew how to do, introduced me to a pay and weigh club. I was 12. It was a meeting held at the local Boys and Girls Club that I attended for various other activities throughout my developing years. I remember feeling hopeful that this program of restriction and discipline would teach me what I needed to know to get thin. My mom would make my meals and pack my lunches. We would have a few weeks, maybe even months of success, but invariably we would find ourselves standing at the freezer late at night with large serving spoons, scooping out the cold, creamy treat and laughing that we were only having a taste. So it didn't count. Plus, we were standing up, and everybody knows the calories don't count if you're standing up. We had catchphrases and magnets that told us that nothing tasted as good as thin feels. I started on a journey of believing that if I were just able to lose weight and become thin, I would feel good and my life would be perfect. But I never made it to my goal weight before the sweets and treats would be calling me again, and the slippery slope would start all over. One time when I was in 8th grade, around the same weight that I am now, actually a little heavier, I got very sick for a week. Nothing would stay down, and the doctors had to give me a shot to finally stop getting ill. By that point, there was nothing left in my body to get rid of. The doctor said that if the shot they gave me didn't work, they would need to admit me to the hospital to get IV fluids. I was both scared and intrigued at the thought of a hospital visit. On the way home, my mother said, "Wouldn't it be great if you could just stay the same weight that you are now?" A voice in my head thought, "I have nothing in my body. There is no way I can stay at this weight." The unspoken message that my head chose to hear deeply again was that I was not good enough unless I was thin. Another time around the same time frame, feeling particularly bad about my state of my body, my mom said to a neighbor while I was present, "Should I tell her that she is the same weight I was when I was 8 months pregnant?" Now, my mom absolutely loves me, and I know it. There is nothing that she would not do for me. She was my first and most dedicated binge buddy. I've come to know deeply in my soul through my work and my program that my mom was doing the best that she could with the knowledge she had. She has suffered her entire life with dieting and restricting. My grandmother at times restricted so severely that one might have thought her slightly anorexic. I did not have that problem. I heard somewhere, probably a Lifetime movie, that anorexics would eat paper instead of a meal, so I tried that for one meal and decided I was probably not an anorexic. In fact, I could not restrict long enough before the sweets and treats were calling me back, and once I started, I would wonder why I ever stopped enjoying myself in this way, because I had such a sense of relief. Slowly, the treats would increase until they were a regular part of my food plan, leading to once again gaining the weight back and more. typically, when I would gain weight, it would distribute evenly over my body, and so people wouldn't notice. It would just kind of gradually gain, and they wouldn't say anything. I've always been somewhat comfortable with my body, which is not the same thing as being comfortable on my skin. So I would joke about my weight and my size so that people would only see my humor. My humor, however, was self-deprecating and created a negative story that kept me stuck in my perception of who I was and what I was capable of achieving. Over the years, I tried cigarettes, drugs, alcohol, and sex. But nothing was as comforting to me as food. And nothing else could hold my attention as often or as long as the sense of ease and peace that food would give me. Food was always socially accepted. As I've looked back on my life during the past year of working the program, I've awakened to how pervasive my addiction to food has been and how destructive it has been to the interpersonal relationships that I've tried to maintain. I've been in my current relationship for 4 years. My current partner's been very supportive in my healing endeavors. He is not a compulsive overeater, as far as I know. Not my job. But all of my past relationships have been with men or women who have been addictive personalities, and I could never figure out why. In my late 20s, I decided to go to an Al-Anon meeting, but did not connect with the message. Sometime during the past year, I realized that my relationships with addictive personalities was what allowed me to have the relationship with food that I had. No one could tell me to diet or not diet as long as they were sick themselves. They had just as much shame, guilt, and pride as I had. It's amazing we could get out of our own ways long enough to pretend we were in a relationship at all. But the bonding always happened in the numbing out. I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I seemed to do well in my job. I was capable and resourceful. I knew how to succeed most of the way. I was a smart woman who was excellent at communicating and connecting with people, and I loved to socialize. I was invited to a lot of weddings. During the 3 successful years of my marriage, we were invited to or in 27 weddings. But the truth be told, I can remember all of the cakes that I had at my friends' weddings more than I can remember the weddings or who I met at them. When my marriage was falling apart, I got myself into one toxic relationship after another and moved a number of times. Each time I moved, it was another chance to get healthy, lose the weight, and be perfect. But it was also an opportunity to eat at a whole new slew of restaurants and meet new people and invariably get lost in my addictions again. In 2007, I went back to my Pay and Weigh program for, as I can count it, possibly my 8th reentry. I had no boyfriends, no husbands, no social life, and this time it worked. I lost over 40 pounds, and I kept it up long enough to get that coveted lifetime card. Soon after this milestone, I moved to Colorado. But before I moved from this community where I'd spent so many months and money getting to my goal weight, I remember that I had to order a special cake from the special bakery for me. My reward. After the move, the weight slowly crept on, so I started to get involved in triathlons. Over a period of 5 years, I did 4 sprint triathlons. Now, these are not massive undertakings for some people, but for me, it gave me one more way to swing the pendulum and play with food. It was a whole new way to explore how I could enjoy food and maybe be normal. I also became a nutritional shake and supplement distributor for years, and I used the product as a way to offset the behaviors that I knew were not going to keep me healthy. But I just didn't know how to stop. In January 2015, I found out I was pregnant for the first time in my life. I had spent my life up until that point trying not to get pregnant, and at 45, this planned accident was something that affected me deeply. I had 3 months of imagining what the second half of my life was going to be like. I was scared, honored, and thrilled to be pregnant. I felt like my life and struggle finally had a meaning. I was going to be a mother. I dreamt about creating a healthy life for my child, and then I found out that the pregnancy was over. I miscarried in April of 2015. After the DNC, I found out it was the girl that I had prayed for. From that moment onward, as I gained weight and couldn't find the off button or the will to start an exercise program, I was convinced that it was my hormones that had shifted, and now that was the problem. I went to a therapist, and I actually was trying to convince myself that I just needed to learn how to be happy as a fat, lazy woman. About a year after walking into OA, or about a year before, before walking into OA, I was led to a spiritual journey that opened my eyes to the idea that God, universal power, a power greater than me, was always right in front of me. Because it is in each of us. We carry the light of the Spirit. I just couldn't connect with mine because I was so numb. I'm eternally grateful for the work that I did that year before I found OA, because although I was still in the food, I now realize that God was preparing me for the work that I was going to need to do here. Part of that wilderness walk that I did before I came to OA led me to stepping down from my management job and letting go of being in charge in my work life. I was opening up to my work schedule to a full-time, from my full-time job, to get back into work as a massage therapist and healing people with my God-given gifts. Life was going to be perfect now that I was changing my job again. However, I was still miserable and more into the food than ever. It was over a year since my miscarriage, and I was now over 200 pounds. I was eating sugary desserts at every meal, starting when I woke up. I would eat breakfast at home or on the road, get to work, see breakfast foods in the break room, and eat all over again. I had snacks in every bag, every jacket, every plate at work, at home, and in my car. I honestly don't know when one meal ended and another one started. Physically, I'd been struggling with plantar fasciitis for a couple of years and gotten to the point where I used a cane to get up to go to the bathroom when I first woke up. I couldn't buckle my seatbelt without rolling out of the way. I couldn't get out of my car without hoisting myself out. I could not squat and stand up on my own strength. None of my coats would close in the winter, and I refused to buy bigger ones. I reasoned that I deserved to be cold because I had allowed myself to get so big. I had purchased yoga pants and flowy dresses so that I did not have to put on any clothes that had zippers, buttons, belts, or buckles. I refused to go buy clothes that were sizes bigger than XL, so I would just find ones that stretched to fit. I would make baked goods and bring them to work for everyone to eat, but I would make sure that at least half were at home for me, and then take some more of it and squirrel it away once I got to work. Soon before OA, I remember making these special treats that I won an award for at work because they were so special. I kept some at home so I could eat one a day until they were gone. I came home one day and my boyfriend had thrown them in the trash because they were stale. I was livid. I was not the one who had decided to throw them away, nor would I. Everyone knows you can put stale treats in the microwave for a few seconds and they are as good as new. So I dug them out of the trash and I ate them. And as I ate them, I noticed that perhaps they were a little bit stale. And I knew that things had gotten out of control. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know about OA. But it was soon after that moment, in the darkness of my office at home, that I found the OA Denver website and I took the quiz. I answered yes to all but one question. Later, after working the program, I realized I had probably not been able to be fully truthful and that I wanted to identify out. I went to my first OA member meeting on September 27, 2016. I did not call anyone ahead of time or tell anyone I was going. I did not know if I would show up, and I didn't want to disappoint anyone anymore. When I sat in the room, I heard my story being spoken through the mouths of other people, big and small, young and old, men and women. I was told about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. I knew that I was in the right place and that some kind of universal power greater than me had led me here. I was told to go to 6 meetings to see if this was the right place for me. I heard that this program was free and that I could attend a few meetings before paying anything. So that meant I could go to 18 meetings, 3 meetings at 6 different locations, and still not have to pay. Surely I could get better by then and have to pay nothing. What I found out during that early process was that I was very capable of identifying out, but that my higher power kept gently providing me with opportunities to connect and heal if I was willing to do the work. I was offered a partial scholarship to the convention in 2016 and heard the Big Book come to life through a recovered member who had lost over 500 pounds. I met people who the obsession of the mind had been lifted, and they claimed to be living a happy, joyous, and free life. I went to meetings and events that were sponsored by CCI, similar to the event that we are at here now. I made and received phone calls from other OA members. I read different OA literature and listened to as many vision phone call meetings as I could, because I found on those calls my world and my mind were expanded every day and grounded in the spiritual solution through people from around the world. For the first 3 months, I accepted that I was a compulsive eater and that I overate at times, and therefore I needed this program. But I was not allergic to anything. I had gone to the doctor, and I had all of the tests to prove it. But then I listened to a special edition speaker meeting on a Sunday in December 2016 by a recovered member in Canada. And her story ignited a spark in me, where suddenly I had the willingness to look at my own eating behaviors and possible trigger foods. I decided, I think I'll try this abstinence thing on January 1st. I found a sponsor who would work through the Big Book with me. God provided me with the gift of a fellow sponsor who offered to be my food sponsor, which meant committing my food at the end of every day for the following day. All I had to do, one day at a time. And Tuesday, January 3rd, I read the doctor's opinion with my recovered sponsor. I went to the OA birthday in LA a couple weeks later and packed a suitcase with all of my meals, all of them, a travel pot to cook them in, and a flu that had set in a day earlier. I was sick as a dog at the convention, but I was challenging myself in ways that I had never before experienced and got to at least be around others with whom I could relate. At the OA birthday, I attended a workshop that helped guide members through a process to come up with an abstinence plan, and I found out it was all work that I had somehow been doing already. Something was at work in my life, and I could feel that I was changing. I remember in January last year, after eliminating my abstinence foods and my behaviors, that there were times that I was crawling out of my skin. It reminded me of when I would attempt to quit smoking. I felt like an addict going through withdrawals, because I was. I was irritable and restless, and I knew that it was because, in the beginning, as I had heard, I would be dieting with group support. I also knew that the only way to get past the feeling would be to continue to do the work. I was not sure if I would have a spiritual awakening, but I figured since I had dieted so much in my life, I could certainly give this a try for a few months and see what happened. If nothing else, I thought I might lose some weight. At this point, I had lost 10 pounds and hadn't even worked the steps. So what did I have to lose? I had already run out of ideas. Early on in my work with a sponsor, he had told me to read and become familiar with page 86 in the Big Book. In late January, I had decided that it was finally time to put away Christmas, and that if everyone helped and did it my way, it would go quickly and be fun. Well, after a few minutes, the 9-year-old was bored and turned the vacuum cleaner into a gun. His father had decided to work on his computer, and pretty soon my frustration with the process had driven everyone away. I got so angry that everyone left to go have pizza and get away from me. I was so angry that I was almost speechless. I finished the work by myself, went to my journal to cry and have a pity party about how everyone had deserted me. After a few moments of journaling, I stopped in my tracks. A spark led me to the big book and the top of page 86. I worked my way through the questions and realized after a few moments, I couldn't wait to apologize for my part and own what I had done to drive away the very people in my life that I wanted to be close to. God had started to work miracles in my program. After just a couple of months of working with my sponsor and getting to the point where I had worked through my fourth step, I was excited and nervous to share and receive guidance. There was some miscommunications that day with my sponsor regarding the time. There was a time change, and we also had just had our clocks rolled back. And the last text that I received that day, and I'm paraphrasing, said that I should find another sponsor to guide me through the steps. I was crushed. I allowed myself to have a pity party, but I did not once want to go to the food. I also asked my higher power to help me see and feel the message in this discomfort. I realized that my recovery was never going to be dependent. In this moment, I realized my recovery was never going to be dependent on any one person, one meeting, one convention, one speaker, or any experience in this program. It began to be clearer and clearer that this program of recovery was going to be about my relationship with my higher power and how I choose to cultivate that every single day. Within a day, a member of our local community reached out to me and with loving arms offered to accept my fifth step and see where the work would take us together. I continue to work with my local sponsor to this day. I imagine that this person will be with me throughout my journey, but I know that I will work with many other sponsors along the way because I will continue to work through the steps over and over as my life goes on. This program is part of my life now, and I know that my life and sanity are better for it. Throughout the first month that I worked the program, my relationship with food evolved. At first, I felt at peace, a peace that I had not felt in the past when dieting. A fellow in program had talked about trying to fill her God hole with food and how it never worked. I looked at food as something that could potentially numb out the work that I was doing, and I was deeply interested in seeing what life might feel like if I were not to constantly obsess about food. I had no idea what that would feel like. On one occasion, I ate a garlic knot. It was not something that I could not eat, but it was not on my food plan for the day. And I hadn't told my food sponsor ahead of time. I knew immediately that I was acting on self-will. I felt shame about my behavior. I felt my self-will wanting to control my choices, and I reached out to my food sponsor and my big book sponsor, and I did more work to dig into the why behind the action. I did not fall off into the abyss. I did not say, fuck it. I did not give up on myself or the program of action. I began to feel a love and a grace toward my disease that I had never experienced in the past. I now began to know that there is another way to live, and that is to recover, recover, recover. While my addict mind occasionally likes to think that I might be able to eat normal someday, my connection with spirit on a daily basis and to this community through daily phone calls, phone meetings, and my weekly face-to-face meetings help me to stay grounded in what actually works. As my recovery evolved, I have become willing to take on service roles. I started by going to an intergroup meeting to see how our organization works to help bring recovery and the message of OA to others. I eventually became a representative to a meeting at intergroup and have been attending once a month for the past year. I was able to serve at a table at a couple of health fairs and bring the message to other suffering compulsive overeaters, one of whom happens to be here today. And I didn't even know that she had actually heard our message until she signed up for this event. God does work in mysterious ways, and we never know whose sparks we are igniting. I try to attend the events that are put on by our intergroup, because I get to hear other people's stories and connect to spirit in ways that surprise me every time. I am open and willing to allow the message to fill my heart and my soul. One day I was listening to a morning phone meeting, and a member on the phone said, "Sometimes members get upset with me when I talk about Oreos and Kit Kat bars because they say it makes them want to go eat an Oreo or a Kit Kat bar." I listened to and thought to myself, yeah, I remember that. Early on, I would get so pissed when people would talk about a particular food in a share and they'd obsess about it because just talking about that food would make my mouth water and my mental obsession kick in. And it wasn't long before I felt like it was going to take an act of God to keep me away from that food that I was obsessing about. Then the member who was sharing continued, and he said, "If what I say makes you want to go eat an Oreo or a Kit Kat bar, that is not my problem. That is because you are not recovered and you need to keep doing the work. Food is never the problem. The problem, as the big book says, is the buildup of normal human emotion. And as food addicts, we have used food as the solution." I suddenly realized, as standing there in my kitchen, as I listened, that I completely understood, as the promises say that we will, what he was talking about. I didn't just realize it, I felt it. I had been gifted with a spiritual awakening somewhere along my journey, and I never want to numb that light again. I'm now down 50 pounds from when I walked through the doors of my first OA meeting, and the weight loss has happened seemingly effortlessly. I can honestly say that I am, most of the time, happy, joyous, and free of the food obsession. I don't want to lie and say it's perfect. And so I'm here sharing whatever small glimmer of hope or light that I can with you. I can tell you that until now, I never stopped running or numbing. This past year has been one of... standing in place, feeling the pain, letting go of the numbing, and sitting in the discomfort. I invite a power greater than myself into my life every morning and throughout my day to help me better understand what it is that I do not understand. I pause before I eat everything and give thanks for the peace that I am gifted around food. I pray for others' well-being instead of my own. I pray for the knowledge that I'm loved, worthy, and enough, because I now know that food will never, ever give me those feelings. I have come to realize throughout the year that I do not know who I am yet, and that this new person that is emerging is a whole new version of me. I accept God's grace as a gift, that it has always been free and available. I just have to remain open and clear of those things that edge God out, like my ego. Last year, I started my abstinence plan on New Year's Day. I also started working this program and working with a sponsor. Last year, I did not make a resolution on New Year's Day. I set an intention. An intention that I have set one day at a time. I set my intention to connect with spirit and not with food as a way to fill my soul. Friends, will you pray with me? Dear God, it is our sincerest heartfelt prayer that each of us will find the grace that we are given so freely through this program of action, and that we will continue to choose to walk this path one day at a time. Help us to live happy, joyous, and free of the obsession of food. May we each find the willingness to allow your Spirit into our lives so that we may be filled with the sunlight that surpasses all understanding. Amen. I am extremely honored. Thank you for letting me share.